If you're intrigued by the connection between the mind and the body, you might know about somatic work. There's a specific approach called somatic experiencing that was developed by Dr. Peter Levine, which is based on an idea that trauma can become stuck in the body. And then through guided techniques, we can release that trauma, release that trapped energy. It's about restoring a sense of safety and regulation and balance in the nervous system if those things have been disrupted by trauma. And as I was thinking about this topic and the mind-body connection, it got me thinking about how stress and trauma might manifest externally as well in the body. Like, could those things be felt on the outside? And so I reached out to a massage therapist who's been working in the field for decades to pose that question. Can you feel stress physically on a client? Here she is.
I ended up going to massage school when I was like very early 20s, and now I'm 46. I've been doing it for 25 years, and it is the like hands down best decision I've ever made in my life. My work is so much part of who I am that like it's just part of who I am, and it would be a hard day to ever separate it. Like, I don't ever dream about retiring. I always want to be connecting with people, always. And I can't imagine not.
I guess maybe this is like a naive question, but is there any way that you can describe what stress or anxiety, like what that feels like on the body? Do you ever feel knots? Does it feel hot? Like, are there any descriptors like that?
Yes, like all of the above. I mean, if you think, a lot of people have a lot of like neck and shoulder tension, right? And when you think about it, or you talk to them a little bit more, it's literally like they're carrying the weight of the world. So that feeling of like burdens, or, you know, they're financially responsible for everything, or they take care of the kids, or whatever it is that in their mind that they're carrying themselves, is like it. A lot of that ends up here. People, clients that have low back issues, stuff like that, when that comes up, I'm like, well, what's going on? You know, how did you, you know, especially when it's like, I didn't do anything. It's not like I was shoveling. And of course, like, yeah, now my, you know, right side of my back is screaming. When it's just like, I don't know what happened. I have this, you know, tightness in my back. And then I'll ask a little bit more questions about, well, what's going on? Like, is there something happening that's different? Or are you thinking about something? And a lot of times it's something like financial, something familial. So they can show up differently in people, but a lot of times there's similar things happening, especially people with, like sadness and grief. Like a lot of that sits like in the lungs. A lot of that sits then across the shoulders or mid thoracic. You know, I mean, there's so many, you could go, every organ in the body has an emotional content to it. So it's like, you can equate, you know, lungs with grief and sadness, or, you know, body parts with, you know, Chinese medicine goes through all this. And, but you definitely can feel it. And sometimes it is hot, and sometimes it's really like thick and sticky, and sometimes it's low tone, or, you know, it is different. But yes, you can. And people are like, oh, you feel like, it's always just a knot, right? Like, you could feel that knot, you could feel it. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And then sometimes it's like you start pressing on that. And I don't talk in my sessions unless my clients do. So this is their time. That's how I always tell them, like, this is your table time. If you want to talk, talk. If you don't want to talk, I'll never say a word. And sometimes you start pressing around on stuff and they'll come up with like, you know, my mom pulled my hair when I was 5, and it's really bizarre. Like, and then they'll tell this whole story and they'll be like, I don't know why I just told you that. Like, it literally just came out of nowhere. And I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, because, you know, our nerdy joke as therapists are like, your issues are in the tissues. We always joke about that, but it's true. And sometimes when you can lighten it up, people can get it a little bit better that way. And then that starts getting them to thinking like, oh yeah, you know, because you don't always remember everything, right? That was something that we touched it and that came out. Yeah. So it's fascinating work. I love it. I think this is why I don't ever want to stop doing it. Like,
yeah.
And I love that you guys as therapists are like starting to get in this world, because, you know, it is this fine line. I mean, I'm sure that at some point, especially if you're interested in somatics, that you have been like, God, I wish I was allowed to just touch my client. Mm-hmm. Touch is so powerful and meaningful, and we don't have enough of positive touch in our world, and people lack it. Like, there, it's sad. Like, some people, like, sometimes I am the only person touching this person in the whole world, and that to me is like heartbreaking. And I wish I had, like, you know, Ganesh and had a million arms that I could just, you know, touch everybody. But, you know, for you guys, that's got to be so hard when your instinct is to, you know, come touch something, like hold a, you know, do something, hold a hand or, you know, something. And then you kind of are like, well, out of my scope of practice, right? Like, that's got to be hard.
My name is Tobin Richardson. I'm a counselor educator with the vision to save the therapist by creating a forever free podcast style platform designed for learning. And here you'll hear from Bonnie Lego, who's a therapist with a ton of practical experience and training in the somatic world. She believes in the importance of connecting with the body and learning to respect and listen to it. Here she is.
And I think, you know, as therapists, we're always wanting to create that sense of safety, especially in an office environment. You know, if somebody walks into this brand new environment and it's like, wow, like, this is totally new to me. This is their space, right? And I think along the lines of really working with trauma, it's very similar. I have a yoga instructor friend who always says that. He's a naturopathic doctor. He always says that at the beginning of sessions, like, safety creates agency. So make sure you feel safe. What do you need to do to feel safe? And along those lines in therapy, you know, even in telehealth situations, we're doing that, right? So when I think about what got me into somatic work and bottom-up approaches in general, it was really that need to find a way to create safety, to feel safe enough to deal with some of the stuff like from the past. Like, there's this Peter Levine, who's the creator of somatic experiencing. He has like a lot of different quotes, you know, and Google and all that. One of them is trauma is in the nervous system, not in the event. And it really is in the way that we incorporated what happened to us and didn't get to fully process it, perhaps, that really kind of stays with us. And so in somatic work, we really look to integrate, to deal and discharge that past energy that's still kind of there. Well, not kind of, still there. And then really integrate what we can with that excess energy, integrate it into like, what have we learned from it? You know, I have some clients who just continually like trip or fall on one side of their body over and over again. Oh, it's my left side. Like, it's just, that's my bad side, you know? And a lot of times what we'll find is there was like an earlier fall earlier on in their lives. And in a sense, like, the body is repeating this behavior in hopes of like fully processing it. So there are all these really gentle ways in somatic work that we can look at like redoing that fall, if you will, with a corrective experience is what we would call that in somatic work, which is quite different than talk therapy. So when you think about like the window of tolerance, right? I know we talk more and more about that now. That's that place where you feel competent, right? It's that personal range of feeling, emotional, physiological stuff going on that you can experience comfortably without being too overwhelmed or dissociated. Kind of like the middle porridge for the Goldilocks, I guess, right? In that metaphor. So what we do in somatic work is we slowly work at expanding that window. A lot of times when people come in, their window of tolerance is really, really tiny. And window of tolerance can change over the course of a day, and especially with life experiences. So in somatic work, we're initially looking at what that window of tolerance looks like. And it's very different, again, day to day and person to person. So one of the first things we might do in somatic work is something we call orienting. And there are two different kinds. There's exploratory and there's defensive. So if you think about, well, my therapy dog, oh, he's quite a therapy dog. He's laying on the floor back there, chewing on a bone. But my therapy dog, when he walks into my office, and he's been here many, many times, first thing he does is he sniffs around the door and he notices kind of what's going on in the environment. I turn the light on, I turn the overheads on first, and then we go around and we'll turn on all the other lights and shut off the overheads because we don't like overheads here. But he just, you know, he sniffs around in his places and he notices, very much like that. All mammals, us included, we do the same thing. So we walk into a room, kind of notice, okay, here's the door, there's a window over there, and it's not something we do intentionally, it just is what we do. So in somatic work, we start with something as simple as orienting. Like, for instance, right now, Tobin, if you looked around your area, your office, your area you find yourself in, and just kind of allow your eyes to be drawn to three different things. It's very simplistic. And I know, and I work with some engineers that are like, this is so easy. And I'm like, it'll get a little harder, don't worry. But I'll notice three things and then I'll ask you what you notice. So I have a picture of a golden retriever. It's a print of a painting shaking off water. And it always reminds me of like being in Philadelphia on South Street and having a dog there and shaking off the water. And I'll get to that. There's a reason I have that up on my wall for somatic work. I can hear my dog chewing on his bone behind me. So it's an audio aspect of orienting. And my favorite pen. I always have this pen around me and I don't want to use it. So I try not to, I just have it with me, but I never really use it. So that's one of my comfort items on my desk all the time. What do you notice in your area?
So I was noticing the door, which has a fresh paint or has a fresh coat of paint on it. Mm-hmm. And then I was noticing a painting, like a picture that I drew with my family that's on the wall.
Cool.
And then for some reason, I noticed the TV, and I think it's because I wish I didn't have a TV in this room.
Okay. So in somatic work, we could definitely make meaning with Cybam. The M is meaning, and we would maybe even go into that at some point. And those are three great responses of what you notice, just what your eyes are drawn to. So that's that sense of exteroception, using our five senses to notice things outside of our body. And then there's that felt sense or interoception. So we'll typically start with going outside and then going inside and noticing kind of like what's going on in the body. So it might be like, oh, you know, I notice how my sits bones are on my little massage stool I have here. Or I notice one of my shoes, the tongue of it is turned to the side, so it feels a little different on the top of my foot. Or it might even be, you know, I noticed some thirst because I had some coffee this morning, but I didn't have enough water yet. So three little things like that, right? And so this is a really easy exercise, but it's a way, again, to get people a little bit more reconnected to their body, you know, especially when we're sympathetically aroused at times during the day, a little bit more anxious. We don't usually like attend to those things. If you think about like in DBT, how, you know, they'll do the 5-4-3-2-1 to get people back into grounding. It's similar to that. And it's also a bit deeper because then we'll utilize those things further on in the session. So so noticing the environment and noticing those things around you, that becomes kind of the established, that sense of safety in a small way. And, you know, we're building rapport throughout the whole thing. But really, it helps us understand how mammals deal with stress in behavior, as well as really like a means to understand if someone is stuck in more of a fight or a flight or a freeze or even a fawn response regarding different things. And different things bring up different responses, right? So after we do some orienting, and sometimes for people who aren't really accustomed to working with the body and noticing even like skin level stuff, it takes a little bit of time. We might do that in and out maybe three times in our first session. But then we start to notice, you know, this is so non-analytical that we're, you know, and people are usually accustomed to coming in and doing talk therapy and saying, and this is why this happened. And I have these feelings about this person. And that's great in talk therapy. And I really appreciate it. And this isn't about that so much. So we do talk, but as much as we can, we kind of go back into the five senses and the felt sense as much as possible. So really understanding how we deal with different states in our minds. And Peter Levine, the creator of somatic experiencing, really began this work by asking when he was studying animals, and he was like, why is it that animals in the wild, when, you know, surrounded by danger every day, they don't just naturally develop PTSD or traumatic responses that seem to never end, right? It's different for animals in zoos, but we know why that is, because they're not in their natural environments, right? So recognizing that there are these really like these really normal ways that our body activates. And so really focusing on those ways, and instead of shutting them down with our analytical brain and saying like, well, I can't do that, or that's not appropriate, here it is. And that doesn't mean we, you know, what it means is we slowly kind of work into what's going on in the body, really, really slowly titrate into experiences and feel them within the body instead of getting this prefrontal cortex involved. So part of that might be, you know, in defending ourselves, that sympathetic arousal state comes on, right? We might want to fight, right? And so different things happen in our body when the sympathetic aspect of our nervous system is in more, has more control. You know, we get blood in different places, our breathing changes, our heart rate changes, even our pupils change, right? And then also we've got like the dorsal vagal, more of that freeze state, right? We talk about dissociation, and that's like a pretty big theme out there now, right? But really kind of freezing and knowing, okay, I'm not going to survive this. So how do I just kind of numb through it? So with that, we look at that differently than we would look at the sympathetic nervous system. And there are little activities we can do, little things we do together, slowly working into those states. And then there's the ventral vagal, which we all want to be in, right? And sometimes we get to be in it for a little while, and that's wonderful. So also in that orienting, we might notice like, well, what is it about that painting that you see that you created with your family that you really like? And what do you notice in your body when you're remember either doing it, or like if a child was involved in it or something like that. So noticing really like there's like an automatic response that all mammals go through when they're under a threat, and that could be fight, flight, fawn, freeze, all different kinds of stuff our nervous system does. What we learn about those automatic responses is to really respect them. And really, like much like after a threat has passed for animals, they get back to life by discharging. So like my therapy dog and my therapy dog is really patient with my 9-year-old. And yet he's not really into being like my 9-year-old will just lay on him. And because he's a therapy dog, he will take it and he will just look at me with his golden doodle eyes like, please, please let this be over soon. And I have treats at my desk. He gets lots of treats. But once she gets off of him, and usually we don't like keep that going on for more than a few minutes, she likes to hug him and stuff. Once she gets off of him, he immediately gets up and he shakes. He discharges that energy, right? And so within our bodies, just along the same lines, we need to find ways to discharge that energy. Sometimes in the course of a session with people, either if they're seated on one of my chairs, or I also have a massage table behind me, and I do SE touch work, which is what you learn in the third year of SE work. And then there's all these other opportunities for advancement in that. I do cranial sacral as well. So, but wherever they find themselves, you know, there may be periods of time where shaking might happen in the body, you know, releasing some of that past stuff. It may be emotions, it may be affect, you know, it may be that the body needs to do a little movement. When there is movement, it's not that like big movement of like taking a bat to pillows or anything like that. I've done that work. I did that when I was really just out of the military academy, and there's some merit to it. And yet the body really needs to go slower to really process stuff. So it might be like in a defensive position. If somebody attacked someone, it may be, you know, bringing up the arms, the fist, if that feels right, and then really slowly being able to punch. But it's so much even slower than this. But it's these micro movements, and then tracking what we feel in the body as we experience our ability to be grounded and also defend ourselves. So we want to just allow people to have that ability to discharge what's going on, what's been there for maybe even decades, right? You know, you think of, you know, that very simplistic model of Siegel's model of the brain, right? Prefrontal cortex and, you know, the thinking, the social stuff. But then underneath it, the limbic system, that feeling area, right? Talk therapy typically focuses on this, a little on the feelings, right? But really on the thinking. But somatic work really focuses on this, the limbic system, and then also that deeper brain. And Bessel van der Kolk has talked a lot about how, like, in order to really process trauma, to fully process it, we got to go beyond this. So the methods that we can find to really focus on that. And in my own case, like I started with EMDR, which I really appreciate. I like Brain Spotting too, which is created by David Grand, like a mix of, he's both an SEP and an EMDR, like very long-term EMDR consultant and therapist, but Brain Spotting is kind of the mix of the two. SE was helpful. I even, you know, delved into psychedelic work, but the somatic aspect of each of the bottom-up approaches that I have been able to utilize myself as a client earlier on and continue to when I need to, but and also as a therapist, those have been really the most beneficial for the people I work with. And of course, that's because that's where my passion lies. I know that. And yet it's really great to see people come out of places and feeling states and feel different in their body, walk differently, you know, notice, wow, I'm taking deeper breaths. I'm not so focused on what happened with my dad or with my aunt. You know, I'm really focused on like five things today that, you know, that I can appreciate. And so we do little homework exercises about savoring or noticing the small things. That's one of the other little statements I wanted to remember to incorporate in our talk, was really the small things, noticing the small things brings about bigger changes as we increase that window of tolerance and give people a sense of, oh, wow, like I really liked being able to walk outside today and not have three coats on. That was really nice. I could breathe the air in and not cough, you know, little things like that. I could even smell spring a little bit versus, man, it's so cold. And, you know, when it's cold, we brace. And so when we can come into a warmer environment and feel more relaxed, I think that's really important. But in SE work, we do touch work sometimes with people, and very consensual, very working from the periphery, from the feet or the hands, and really just offering like a comforting touch, and how beautiful that co-regulation is for people once they feel comfortable with it. One other thing I would want to say about co-regulation is my dog is great. I mean, like any other mammal, especially dogs, they really just like pick up on our emotions. They, you know, like smell them, right? So being able, for many people with really significant trauma histories, or even one big T trauma is enough, but for them to be able to co-regulate with cats, dogs, so many times, even on telehealth, I see some people and they have like their cat will come up to their shoulder at just the right time and start purring. Or they'll just look at them in the eyes. And there's this sense of, ah, kind of dropping into that a little. Oh, that feels really nice to be seen by this animal, right? Cats and dogs can be just wonderful co-regulators and can really teach us a lot about, when my dog comes up to me after a tough session and he just kind of leans into me and they're just like, feels so good to be able to pet him. That might be a homework for people to just take 5 minutes and really feel what it feels like when you're not looking at your phone, right? And you're not worried about who likes your photo or whatever, but just, hey, there's this other being in front of me and we can be present together. There's a lot of mindfulness involved in it too.
Yeah, and you brought up something I was wondering about, which is what would you say to someone who would really like to incorporate more somatic experiencing, but does telehealth stuff? It feels like it would be a barrier potentially.
What I have found most helpful is making sure people find a comfortable place to be during the session. So if they typically like not at a kitchen chair, like staring down at a phone like this, but hey, is your bed a nice place? Can you get the laptop in a place far enough away and you can really relax into it? Have some pillows, have tea or water. And there are a lot of exercises we can actually do even with an SE work. At least one of the years or two of the years in SE training, it was during the beginning of COVID, and we had to do all the exercises online together. So we had a cohort of people from mostly Chicago and some Milwaukee, mostly Chicago area. And then there were people like from Australia, like staying up really late to do the training with us too. But there are definitely ways to incorporate this into telehealth that in SEP training you learn, and also sensory motor psychotherapy, they offer online trainings, I'm pretty sure too. So, I mean, EMDR is used pretty widely via telehealth. There are definitely like small things, also making sure there are no children around. I suggest people don't do this work in cars. Like, I don't think that's really helpful. There's just too much going on outside, right? Some people, because of having kids or significant others, they will go in their garage. Okay, you're in a car in your garage. One of the nice things is you can lean your chair back, right? So you can kind of rest into that. If you have a nice bucket seat or something, you can really rest into that. So there are adaptations we have to make, but it's amazing what we can do when throughout COVID, we had to make a lot of those adaptations too. And we did what we had to do. So, overall, I appreciate people coming in person as much as possible.
I already feel like I understand so much more about like what somatic experiencing looks like, that, and we didn't really get into like what the training looks like. Like, you alluded that it's a multi-year training. What would this 3-year, you know, like commitment look like?
Yeah. Yeah. So there are kind of like, it's like a three, how I think of it is like in terms of the theory. First, we want to understand how all mammals process stuff, right, in their normal environments. And then we want to see how people present to us that are stuck in different ways, like more sympathetically aroused at times. And we all have our times of more sympathetic arousal, or more dorsal vagal sometimes, more frozen. So we notice, we learn about those different states, we learn about what it might look like in presentation, and then really the tools to help people slowly process these things. And again, slowly, like titrating, like that. We talk a lot about it, like that idea of like in chemistry, I was really into chemistry as a high school student, and I was an assistant. And, you know, if you pour two chemicals together really quickly, there could be a really quick, like a volatile reaction, right? So that idea of titrating really slowly with like a bit of like a medicine dropper, adding one quite a bit or quite slowly to the other one. In that way, we learn to slowly work into people's activation from the past. And we do that experientially. So in the first 2 years, each year has three different, either on-site or now sometimes people do it via Zoom, given COVID. They have trainings of, let's see, the first 2 years, each training is 4 days. So it's 12 days for the first year, 12 days for the second year. And then in the third year, it's in person, 6 days in a row, I believe, 6 or 5 days. And that's two times in the third year. And so those in person, they have to be in, I think they almost always have to be in person, but they may have been adding some Zoom ones. But that's really where we start to work with touch work and like with the eyes and things like that, and really understanding how the body processes things and how we can use our own sense of co-regulation when it's, you know, asked for, when it's consented upon, to really focus on, okay, let's kind of move through this together. But you also have to do a lot of like consultations. You have to receive your own sessions. I had received sessions prior to going into training, but then receiving them, you know, it was a requirement to receive so many. You have to go to some consultations, some group consultations, some individual consultations. You really get a really well-rounded understanding of how SE can be applied. And the faculty members, there are PTs, there are lawyers, there are nurses, doctors, there are so many different people, therapists, OTs, PTs that use this work, even like body workers like RYTs and LMTs too. So we come together in these groups and we learn from each other too, which is really cool. But we always stay true to, you know, the themes of recognizing what's going on in the nervous system. We don't look at like a presentation like someone has been diagnosed with bipolar and therefore we do this. We look at how is the nervous system presenting itself to us and what can we do with that and how can we slowly help them to gain access to these places while remaining close to, you know, being within that window of tolerance, or maybe just pushing a tiny bit out of it, but not zooming into another like land where re-traumatization can happen, right? So there are a lot of different ways that we can work through stuff with just kind of those three general themes of recognizing why it happens, how it happens, and what we can do to process it and then increase resiliency so those experiences can help us in the future, like really reinforce different decisions or choices too.